Good morning. This is Ron Kittle of the Chicago White Sox, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for July 14th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hassenflo. Patooey.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Today, Chip, it's Bastille Day. Happy Bastille Day to all of our French listeners.
Oui, oui, oui. We celebrate them all, especially COVID now. It's like, oh, there's something going on. We're going to celebrate all the things French. We'll do the entire show in our fake French accent. I'll be Inspector Clouseau for the remainder of the podcast.
And now we have no French listeners. Thanks, Chip.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You know, this is one of those weeks where movie theaters are still closed for the most part. So we're sitting in our homes and watching our streaming shows. And Chip, you got to watch something you like, and I got to watch something that I like. What did you see first?
Well, let's start a little bit with that. This was supposed to be a major release, and it was not released in a theater. When COVID-19 started, many movies either delayed their release date, or they ended up putting them through a streaming services. So Sony sold this to Apple TV Plus, and this was Tom Hanks' Greyhound, a World War II warship story about how the United States would escort different types of products and supplies from the United States to get over to Europe during World War II, and how dangerous that was.
Especially because of the Nazi U-boats, those unseen enemies.
And they would hunt down the vessels that would carry fuel over, or goods, or any type of anything you can imagine gets shipped over. And in fact, that's what we learned during this. The number of people who passed away was an incredible amount of people. This was a very dangerous work because the airplanes at the time could carry you out and give you that third dimension to look down to see where the U-boats were. And then you would go on a 50-hour trip across the Atlantic, only to arrive to Britain close enough where their Air Force could come out and they could, you know, find out where these U-boats were. Germany warned the United States if they were going to start shipping things across that they would take out these ships, because obviously to Germans that this was the enemy. And this was about that experience. Band of Brothers was a series, I think it was on HBO. The Pacific was on HBO. Saving Private Ryan. Certainly this is has a lot of interest to Tom Hanks. And this very much works as a piece of the wartime experience that many of us, you know, had never experienced and would have very little idea of what was really going on. One of the running jokes throughout this entire movie was from the mess hall, they kept bringing Hanks up food. And every time they were like, you've got to eat something. And every time that would happen, Hanks would take a sip of coffee and something would end up happening. So for 50 hours, you were up and you basically dealt with whatever emergency was coming. I like this. I did not love this. I do think this would have worked well on a big screen. Mm-hmm. And the theater experience certainly was missed here. I did watch it. It is beautifully filmed in the gray palette of the ocean. And I would say 65 out of 100.
Is it good writing? Because Tom Hanks actually wrote this one.
I would say yes. I mean, this is a competent movie. What this movie really misses is not that you don't understand the pressure that's going on. It's that I didn't feel the pressure. During Battlestar Galactica, the episode 33, where the Cylons were chasing the basically the Arks as they were jumping from one hyperspace to another, you could tell the crew of these ships was exhausted. Mm-hmm. You could tell every time they think that they have made that one jump that would lead them to safety, that silence would follow after. That really captured the pressure that was under the humans to, you know, fulfill that mission. Now, that same experience is going on here, but I didn't quite feel the desperation that was going on. Mm-hmm. I felt the gravity intellectually, knowing that, you know, they had seven ships that went down. This had all the supplies that could have, you know, made an impact to the war. And of course, they're being hunted down and they're being taunted the entire time. But I never really felt that experience. And maybe that's where the theater experience would come in.
Mm. Yeah. A little more focus, maybe a little less being at home and being able to be distracted by other things. That theater experience is special. There's no doubt about that. And hopefully we'll be able to get back to that soon.
Mm-hmm. So, Steve, I got to see something that was historical. You got to see something that was pretty much a lot of fun. Tell me about that.
Here's the thing, guys. This is season 7 of Too Much Scrolling. If you haven't figured out by now, Chip likes historical stories, and I like time travel comedies. So I watched Palm Springs on Hulu this week. This is a brand new time travel comedy from Andy Samberg. It is the let's go with the nephew of Groundhog Day. The idea here is a young man is stuck in one day of his life, and he's living that day over and over and over again. Every time he falls asleep, he wakes up in the same day again, and he gets to make choices, just like Bill Murray's character did in Groundhog Day. He gets to choose all of the things that you might want to do if there were no consequences, and he gets to find the things that are important to him in this exploration. This is great comedy. It is, okay, it's a little more gratuitous than Groundhog Day was. Andy Samberg's brand of comedy is definitely different from Bill Murray's, but it still has that same heart, where this character needs to solve the problem of being stuck in the same day over and over again. And he finds out a lot about himself as a result. It's currently 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. It premiered at Sundance in January, where it was immediately picked up for a record-setting $17 million and 69 cents. Yes, that's actually true.
And here's the question. Would this movie have been better as a theatrical release?
Speaking as someone who saw Groundhog Day in the theater and knowing how much that movie annoyed my wife because of its repetition, I think this one actually plays better at the home theater level. Watching it on Hulu at home so that you can go back if you missed something, or you can pause it, I think it actually works better than it would work in the theater, actually.
Okay. And this is playing on Hulu, and this is a comedy, certainly much more slapstick than Bill Murray's.
No, you know what? I disagree with you, Chip. You know what? I think this is about the same level of slapstick as Bill Murray's. There's just as much ridiculous pratfall humor. Almost equal, actually.
Now, are you going to go on a philosophical journey with this movie like you did with Groundhog Day?
I'm being very careful not to spoil this movie for anybody, Chip, because there is certainly a plot line that I'm not expressing in this. It is not the same philosophical journey as Groundhog Day. It is not a religious film, but there is an element of finding out who you are and discovering what's important in your life that is certainly a thread in this.
All right. And in fact, I'm supposed to see this evening. So I look forward to seeing this. I am so glad you watched this. And obviously, Hulu is a wonderful service, and these are the type of fun things you get off that service.
I will give you one tiny little plot spoiler hint. There is another person who who is stuck in the day with the Andy Samberg character, and it is a female human being, and there is a relationship that happens between those two characters that is the focus of Palm Springs.
Wonderful. Now, Steve, you also got to use your other subscription, Amazon Prime, this week.
Yep, I saw The Vast of Night. This is a movie that we talked about twice already because it was supposed to come out and then it didn't come out and then it was coming out on Amazon Prime and now it's out. So here's the third time we're discussing. This is a story set in the 1950s on one fateful night in New Mexico where a young switchboard operator and a radio DJ discover an audio frequency that might be coming from above. You know, New Mexico in the 1950s, where stuff was flying all the time, apparently.
Just move it to Nevada, and it's like, this is Art Bell.
That's right. This was a fun, very much based on the concept of the Twilight Zone. They did a little bit of a frame story on this one, where they were watching a TV show that was... It was the Twilight Zone, but they couldn't get the rights to the Twilight Zone. It was one of those black and white 50s TV shows talking about the strange and unusual occurrences. And in the middle of this is this very careful, very methodical look at what it would be like to be in a situation like this. These two people are normal everyday Joes, and when they start hearing this sound, it takes a long time in the story for them to react to this sound because it's just a sound. You might think of how you would react if you heard something strange. It might jar you out of your seat, but nah, maybe not. Maybe it was just a sound and you would move on with your day. That's one thing that I can say I didn't like about this. It was a little bit slow in developing what the plot was, but it builds on itself very well. I do suggest those of you who like Twilight Zone and enjoy the idea of aliens to see The Vast of Night on Amazon Prime.
Steve, by chance, did you get to see an interview where you could boldly go where no person has gone before?
So, this week, I spent a lot of time with a lot of interviews. There were so many people, so many conventions that were supposed to be happening in July that aren't happening due to COVID. So I've spent a lot of time this week sitting in front of my computer and seeing what were supposed to be panels from different conventions. And yes, Chip, the first one is the William Shatner. He was on an interview on July 11th from GalaxyCon, a convention that was supposed to happen this week but didn't. And Shatner was in his house, in his kitchen, talking to all of us one-on-one, which was phenomenal.
What did we learn from old Bill Shatner now that COVID's going on?
Old is the right word, sir. He is 89 years old. He's going to hit 90 in the very near future. He is still as energetic as ever. It is amazing to see. He was just sitting down. He wasn't running around his kitchen or anything. But he had a lot of very interesting news coming out of the William Shatner compound.
He's done a lot of collaborations in the past, Steve. It sounds like he's got a new collaboration coming up.
Yes, sir. He has a blues album coming out in 2020. He will drop the single sometime this week. And boy, am I holding out my money already because I enjoy the song stylings of William Shatner. I love the silliness and the joy that he brings with his musical talent.
Well, you know, Leonard Nimoy no longer with us. We have his recordings, but Shatner gives us cadence.
You'll never live like common people. I love that song. That Shatner common people song is in my rotation. I listen to that probably once a week, and I just love it. I look forward to his blues album because I love the blues. So there you go. Well, two of my things that I love coming together.
And I'm thinking Ben Folds, he collaborated with before, just a few years ago. And then all those, you know, Mr. Tambourine Man from, you know, the 60s.
Right.
So God bless this fun stuff. Steve, that was not the only panel you got to see.
Yep, I also got to have a conversation with the crew from The Orville. Remember, The Orville is Seth MacFarlane's sci-fi TV show that was on Fox for 2 seasons and is now moving to Hulu for the 3rd season. Unfortunately, they had to stop production. They were in the middle of making the 3rd season, and they had to cut production. 5 members of the crew got together to discuss life AD, after distancing, And they are itching to get back to work. They were really full of energy. This was Scott Grimes, Jay Lee, Mark Jackson, Kelly Hu, and Peter Macon all made an appearance on this panel. And they were just happy to see each other. They were telling jokes to each other more than they were to the audience. And at one point, Kelly Hu said, "It's a miracle that you guys get anything done." You could tell that these people love each other and love working together. And I look forward to what The Orville Season 3 is going to bring us.
And a great example, if you're going to do a Star Trek remake, or pastiche, as I have learned to use the word, then you might as well do something fun like The Orville. Steve, are there any other panels that potentially could have fart jokes in them?
Yes, I saw a panel discussion of Blazing Saddles, one of my top 3 favorite movies of all time from 1974. There were 2 actors on this panel from the original Blazing Saddles: Burton Gilliam, who played Lyle, the dumb cowboy, as he said in the panel, and Rodney Allen Rippey, who played the 5-year-old version of Sheriff Bart in 1974. He's now a little bit older, like most of us are.
Well, deep cuts there, Steve.
Yes. This was a panel for a movie that is 46 years old, and many of the people from the movie are unfortunately no longer with us and no longer available to take our phone calls. But Burton Gilliam and Rodney Allen Rippey had a great time discussing their memories of what this movie meant to them 46 years ago.
Well, I was going to ask you about all the blood being splattered around the Too Much Scrolling studio. So could you tell us a little bit about how that happened, Steve?
So everybody who follows me on social media already knows this, but I'm going to tell everybody in our listening audience who might not be following me on social media. I went to the drive-in on Friday night with my beautiful wife. How about that?
Excellent. Inspiration Point, I think, is the name of it.
First time in a drive-in for my illustrious movie career. And I went there to see... Yeah, I've never been to a drive-in.
Really?
Yeah.
My goodness, Steve.
You know why?
Why?
Because it's outside, Chip. Well, yes. Now that I have the electric car and I was able to run the air conditioning the whole time without the motor running, it was wonderful. But yes, this was my first trip to a drive-in in my lifetime. I went to the Midway Drive-In in Dixon, Illinois. Yeah,
Dixon.
Home of Ronald Reagan. Yes, sir.
Yes.
Halfway to Iowa.
A lot of horses for sale there. Lots of horses.
Yes. Plenty of horses. All the horses you need.
It seems to be a horse scandal happened a few years ago. Lots of horses.
That's right. We went there to see the one and only Bruce Campbell, one of the most charismatic actors I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. He was there to present 2 of his movies, Evil Dead 2 from 1987 and its sequel, Army of Darkness, from 1992. And we had a whole group of people. There were probably 600 people there. The place was packed. It was sold out both Friday night and Saturday night, and we were socially distanced. Everybody was wearing their masks. We had so much fun. We got to interact with each other at a social distance, just close enough to see each other. We had a photo op with Bruce, which was magical. A socially distanced photo op, which I then had to Photoshop later so that we were a little bit closer and take out some of the extra cars, but that's okay. We got autographs. We had merchandise being sold. A free face mask was included in the ticket price. This might be the future of both conventions and movie going, Chip.
All right, so my first thing to ask is, did you go to the snack bar, Steve?
I did. I only got a bottle of water from the snack bar, but yes, the snack bar was open in the most socially distanced way that they could manage that. And we brought lots of food in the trunk because that was acceptable for this presentation, because they don't want you to go to the snack bar as much.
All right, and the second thing I should ask is, this was maybe not a reschedule, but certainly Bruce Campbell was scheduled to premiere somewhere else. Tell us a little bit about that.
That is one of the most interesting parts of this conversation, is the person who owns the Midway Drive-In in Dixon, Illinois, is also the person who puts on the Chicago horror convention called Flashback Weekend. Flashback Weekend is supposed to happen in July, but this year it's not happening, Chip. So this guy is an interesting dude to own a drive-in theater in Dixon, Illinois, and to run a horror convention in Chicago. This is, I think, the future of both conventions and movie going. I think the outdoor experience that I had at this movie theater was phenomenal. Now, granted, the weather was perfect. It wasn't too hot, it wasn't raining, it wasn't winter, but this was a fun way to meet a star on a personal level.
So tell me a little bit about the sound system that was used at the theater, because that is one of the challenges from a long time ago. You have these boxes that you would hang on your window. And they didn't necessarily have the best sound.
That was one thing that was mentioned both by the guy that owns the theater and by Bruce Campbell, was that system is no longer in place. Now they have an FM broadcast that they broadcast the sound from the sound system through an FM channel that you tune in on your radio. And so you're using your high-tech radio, or there were quite a few people walking around with portable radios listening to the sound as they were walking around the area. And the sound was phenomenal.
Well, all those little Bluetooth speakers certainly could make it a much more immersive experience if you wanted to.
Yes. Interesting. This was great. I had a great time meeting Bruce Campbell. I'm not a big horror fan, as Dane Michael was apt to point out on my social media, but I am a fan of comedy, and I am a huge fan of charisma. The charismatic existence that is Bruce Campbell was shining on Friday night, and I had a great time.
Hey, Steve, can we go to a place where Frankenstein's monster and the Bride of Frankenstein get together and we can find out what they create?
I hope so. I want to live in that world. Stacy saw Baby Frankenstein this week, featuring Andre Gower.
Hey everyone, this week I watched Baby Frankenstein, which if you follow too much scrolling's Twitter, you know they made me aware of recently. And with a title like that, how could I pass it up? It's out now on video on demand, and it was not what I expected based on the promo shots beforehand. But more on that later. Baby Frankenstein is the story of Lance, who's just moved to a new town with his mother Kim and her very interesting choice of boyfriend Ken. Upon investigating the attic, he finds himself a new friend, who needs the help and friendship of him and his neighbour Crush Truth to keep him safe against a bounty on his head, a mysterious agent that's after him, and money-grabbing Ken. On opening, the film feels really reminiscent of classic 80s films. It has a strong Goonies, Monster Squad, E.T. vibe to it, which is a perfect fit because this is not the full-on horror you may have expected from the title. It's family-friendly fantasy fun, with a touch of horror and a bucket load of charm, just like those films I've mentioned. And it also, again, gives us the story of a monster who isn't a monster, and the kids that accept them regardless and without judgment. The titular baby Frankenstein, or little dude as he gets called in the film, which makes more sense anyway because, as we all know, Frankenstein is the name of the doctor, not the monster, right? Is unlike you'd expect if you saw the promo posters that went around before release. These made him out to be a menacing, beastly, sort of otherworldly creature. Instead, what we get is a cute human being-like, well, little dude. And all of this is thanks to the brilliant special effects makeup skills of Lisa Forst. And he has more in common with E.T. than any monster that you'd normally see. Ronson Nix plays him with a sweet, wide-eyed curiosity that evokes ours rather than args. You will definitely like Little Dude. All of the cast play their parts well. It's a pleasant surprise whilst watching that there's no perfectly good character. Even those we root for in the film have their moments that make you cringe, just like people in real life, which makes them more endearing and gives you more character development. Giving them these facets makes it far more interesting. So even with our mysterious suited and booted Agent Lundquist, played fantastically by Andre Gower, who horror fans will know best for the ever-beloved Monster Squad, and also director of Wolfman's Got Nards, which, as an aside, we really need a release of as soon as possible. Please, somebody. Here, he's more than just the straight man that we see in the first half of the film, which still elicits laughter, when just through his eyes alone he makes clear how annoying it is to deal with the frustratingly bumbling fool that is Ken whilst he's looking for Little Dude. Those flashes of more beneath build as the film goes on to surprise you with him at the end. Speaking of Ken, boy, he is a wholly unsympathetic character. Mouthy and the living embodiment of toxic masculinity, to an almost painful comedic level, making you almost immediately think that Kim should be with anyone else but him. Here's your monster right here, and Patrick McCartney plays him with this greasy, manic quality that has you begging for karma to step in. Baby Frankenstein isn't perfect, but I don't think it needs to be. It's easy to forgive small weaknesses in the film, like a few plot points that don't quite work, and a lack of a way to go at times, when it bowls you over with charm throughout. This is a sweet, sometimes schmaltzy film that evokes those comforting feelings you get when you throw on those old 80s flicks that we love so much. The ones that I mentioned earlier, for instance. And it does all of this on a budget of $50,000. This is a whole lot of joy on a shoestring. I think we're in a time where we could all use a little lightness and comfort, and Baby Frankenstein provides it in spades, interestingly doing exactly what our little dude was designed for all along. You will smile, I know I did. And that's all for this time. If you want more of my ramblings on films or whatnot, or you want to chat to me about horror, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, at Films with Stacey, where you can also find links to my website to read more. Until next time, happy viewing.
Thank you, Stacey. Thank you for watching that for us, and hopefully we can get that interview with Andre set up real soon. I would love to talk to him about his filmmaking. Opening this week, or more likely being available this week in your house, we've got A Brave New World coming to our TV screens via Peacock.
Yeah, NBC had to get involved in streaming at some point. CBS did their service, All Access, which will have a new name. And I guess this will get even more confusing for the population. So Brave New World is based on Aldous Huxley's book about a dystopian future where they feed you drugs and make you have sex all the time. And that is the solution to everything. And I think, in my opinion, that book, along with Atlas Shrugged and the third, which is 1984, certainly would make the, certainly grab the dystopian futures as thought of during the period of time when those books were written back in the 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. This is certainly the right type of show to present on a new streaming service. How many new streaming services are we going to subscribe to, Steve?
I don't know. The good news about Peacock is that it is free. The bad news is that it is free with commercials. So,
oh, it is free.
It is free, so you don't have to pay for this one. You don't. You do have to choose to go to Peacock, but it is free to make that choice.
Mm, how interesting. So, so on the 15th, when it's released, you can go and you can download the app on your favorite streaming device. We'll talk a little bit about that in a minute.
Yep.
All right, Steve, on Netflix, is there something that is a documentary that we're going to learn a little bit about drugs?
Great. So we've got drugs in the first movie. We've got drugs in the second movie. This is called The Business of Drugs, though. This is a docuseries about the economics of six illicit substances. That's actually kind of interesting.
Steve, we read a book on this, or I read a book on this a few years ago, basically on the economics of narcotics, and how they made it their way from, I guess, these poor areas in Central America, and they made their way up to the United States, and how they formed those markets, and how those markets were I guess, grabbed. They were assigned to certain areas. And which markets, which areas they would solicit those drugs in versus other areas. And there were a lot of interesting facts that came out, maybe things that we would not normally suspect. So I have a lot of interest in watching this. This certainly is going to be one of the topics that history is going to review, this war on drugs, and I don't think they're going to be too kind on it. So while I don't suggest anyone use illegal drugs or anything of that nature, certainly there's a business that is surrounding this, and people are seeking this out. Let's learn a little bit more about why this happened.
I look forward to your review of The Business of Drugs on Netflix.
So Crazy Rich Asians was a big hot movie this last year, Steve. What does HBO Max have to say about that?
They say, give us more. And so they've created a docuseries following the life of the Ho family. It's called The House of Ho, and it's premiering on HBO Max.
Well, there you go. We've got another one. There's a few other things that were released this week. Let's just move on, Steve. Let's go to where we can talk about reading.
Book it. Book it.
Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. You know, we have been reading through the entire canon of Sherlock Holmes, every word that Arthur Conan Doyle ever wrote about the illustrious detective. And so this week we read a, read is not exactly the right word. We listened to an Audible exclusive called The Real Sherlock by Lucinda Hawksley. This is a series of 6 episodes going through the biography of Arthur Conan Doyle.
There's 56 short stories that are part of the original canon. There are 4 novels that are part of Arthur Conan Doyle's canon. And we have 1 novel to go and just a few short stories. And so Professor Bedore certainly has enlightened us on many ways and made us better readers. And so this is really a nice opportunity to go learn a little bit more about the author. But I'm going to suggest to you, Steve, as we were kind of preparing for this, maybe all of the information we were getting wasn't quite as true as we'd like it to be.
Well, you and I both heard in this presentation that it was said that Arthur Conan Doyle and
J.M. Barrie
and Bram Stoker all went to school together. That is not true. Bram Stoker was 12 years older than the two of them, so they couldn't have attended school together. They were friends.
Yeah, maybe they were all friends. And imagine that is your network. Your network is the writer of Peter Pan, probably the most influential, or one of the most influential children's books of all time. Certainly, we all know who this character is. Bram Stoker, Dracula, as Professor Bedore tells us, certainly the gothic introduction for many, many people. There's a whole layer of information that you can kind of unwind with that. And we all know who Dracula is. There's a new Dracula movie probably every year, if not every other year. Right. And then Sherlock Holmes. I mean, the master detective. I was thinking about these three characters. Moses, Jesus, Egyptian mythology, Greek mythology, Norse mythology. I mean, right below that are these three characters.
Right. And then below that are the characters from our childhood, the Star Wars characters, the Han Solo, the Luke Skywalker, those strong, important characters. Those three characters from the turn of the century certainly influenced a lot of writing, and Doyle certainly was a character in and of himself. That's what we are looking at in this series, The Real Sherlock. This is one of the free Audible originals that are available each month on Audible. available. They give you, usually it's one, but during the coronavirus, they've been offering like seven of these for free so that we have information. And it's really great to find new information, isn't it?
Yeah, and so if you are a subscriber to Audible, and I would suggest that you consider it, because it is a lovely way to be able to expand your reading knowledge. Most of us can't read multiple books at a time. You certainly can in Audible. And this is one of the free ones they put out with it. This is a lot of interviews with descendants of Arthur Conan Doyle. So we get some insights to, you know, the types of things the family felt were important to hand down from one generation to another. This is an introduction to some of the actors who portrayed Conan Doyle and those who are in William. While this certainly isn't 100 and like the greatest things ever, it certainly does have some insights that I did not realize about our stories. And right. By the way, this is beyond just Sherlock Holmes.
Correct. That is one of the things that they talk about in this is how Doyle didn't love the fact that Sherlock Holmes became the thing he was famous for. He wanted to be known for so much other writing, but all of it is 100% overshadowed by this great character that he wrote, Sherlock Holmes. He was frustrated by that. That's why he let Sherlock Holmes die and didn't want to write Sherlock Holmes anymore, because he wanted to be known for so many other wonderful pieces.
Where we usually see something like this is where an actor portrays a character, like Adam West plays Batman, Fred Gwynn plays Herman Munster, and
sorry,
William Shatner plays T.J. Hooker. You know, right. They get pigeonholed, Steve.
To be backtracked for a second, when we were having the chat with William Shatner, the chat bot would take out the word hooker and it would not allow that word to be typed. So every time we referenced T.J. Hooker, nobody knew what we were talking about.
But for actors, it was very difficult. You remember George Reeves, who played Superman?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he ultimately, I think he committed suicide.
Correct.
Concerning it. It can be something that's too heavy. When you leave the character may not leave you.
Right.
And I'm thinking of Leonard Nimoy. He wrote the book, I Am Not Spock. And then later on in life, he revisits it to say, I am Spock.
That's right. Of course, I think of Tom Baker, who definitely had a career before Doctor Who, but Doctor Who became such a central part of who he was. He absolutely quit that, didn't want to talk about it, didn't want to be a part of the community for 40 years, and now he's finally embraced it. Now, as a person heading into his 90s, he's finally embracing the idea that he was pretty amazing as Doctor Who. I think that's what we see with Conan Doyle in The Real Sherlock. We hear the sound of his voice in this, recorded voice. That was pretty spectacular. And there was an interview with his daughter, who has unfortunately also passed away, but there was a time where she was able to tell the stories of the family.
And I'm going to use something very local to us. We have Chester Gould, who wrote Dick Tracy and drew Dick Tracy for many, many years. His family lives not too far from us. And I have met the wife and also the children of him, and they've written books concerning it. And the idea that you can hit something and it resonates with a group of people is pure magic. I mean, it's what we're all looking for. And at the same time, it's also what weighs you down. That's what you're identified with.
Right.
And so there's this dual part that you're like, I just want to get noticed. And you're like, oh my goodness, this is why they notice me.
Right. I admire a lot of people. I admire a lot of people's work. That's what I did this week, was I sought out those people who I admire. Bruce Campbell, the stars of Blazing Saddles, the crew of the Orville, and William Shatner. I got a chance to speak to them this week because I admire what they did. But absolutely, every one of those, they are living under the gleaming spotlight of that part that they played. Doyle was no different.
It's the same challenges we have as the host of Too Much Scrolling, Steve.
That's right.
The paparazzi is just unbelievable.
We have to protect ourselves and not tell everyone where we're at all times. Oh, wait, I do exactly the opposite on social media, don't I?
All right, so on that same note, I'm reminded of the comedians getting coffee with Jerry Seinfeld and Zach Galifianakis, and Zach is totally complaining about his privacy being gone, and Jerry Seinfeld says, "That is the price to pay, my friend.
Yeah, that you signed up for this.
You this wanted to be this wanted. Character. Uh-huh. Who are these people?" And yeah. I think that was the wisdom of an older person who recognize the business of entertainment mm-hmm. and the challenges of being who you are. And then you take what Doyle did in creating this massive character, and that allowed him the finances to be able to do the other things that he values. So I think there is a lesson to learn from this, is even if you do create something that you feel is beneath you or something you just don't have the passion for, you certainly could use that to help finance the things that you do find of interest.
Wonderful. That is The Real Sherlock. It's by Lucinda Hawksley, and you can find it on Audible.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our Scroll With It. Good news, Chip. Baseball is back this Sunday.
Baseball has been very, very good to me.
That's right. This Sunday, the two Chicago teams will be going head-to-head at Wrigley Field. Then on Monday, they will be taking the show on the road to the South Side and playing a game against each other at Guaranteed Rate Field, still the worst-named field in the universe.
Well, the reason why it may be the worst name in baseball is if you look at the logo for Guaranteed Rate,
yes,
you might as well just put a thumbs down. But you know, when they start listing off all the championships the sports professional sports teams of Chicago have, they'll always forget that White Sox World Series.
That's right. So maybe this is their year. This is their year. We've got 60 games. Don't screw it up. I look forward to this. As much as I'm not a sports guy, I miss baseball. I miss the conversation of baseball. The idea that I could turn on the radio and listen to a ball game pretty much every day of the summer for my entire life until this year. It's missing.
And as a person who works from a home office many days, having the greenery of a field behind you, whether it's the golf tournament, the soccer game, a football game, or a baseball game, it just gives you, it's sunny, it's beautiful. You can stop for a minute. You can check what's going on out there. There's a lot of, it creates the environment that makes work so much more enjoyable, especially when you're working by yourself.
I look forward to Sunday, and I will be taking a nap while the Cubs are playing again.
So, Steve, I'm going to go down to the corner, ask my local guy if there's some Soma out there, and pick up this Peacock streaming service.
So yes. This week, finally, we, the rest of us, get to see the Peacock streaming service. Comcast users, some certain Comcast customers, have had access to this for weeks, but starting tomorrow, the rest of us get... it's still a terrible name. I don't want to tell you the Brian Brushwood conversation over how this streaming service can be beat, but let's get the Peacock.
Well, it's not going to beat the worst one, Crackle, which is Sony's streaming service, which I didn't know how you put that with Sony. Sony,
no,
and Crackle.
You don't.
The Peacock has been NBC. It's been the symbol of NBC for many, many years. And the reason is they use this colorful feathers as the backdrop of showing all the colors of the television.
That's right. So this is going to show all the colors of streaming services. Again, it is free for all users. Comcast users get free access to the commercial-free version. All the rest of us can pay $10 a month to get rid of ads if we wanted to.
Well, I have Xfinity Internet. I'm wondering if I get access to this without commercials. I don't know. We're going to find out.
Yep, I would look into that for sure. Hopefully all the apps will be available today for your streaming devices. They have not yet released the apps for Apple TV or Roku or Fire TV. Hopefully those will come out today so we can see, we can get our Aldous Huxley dystopia on.
That's right. At some point we have to get it to it, Steve. You know, we want to have something to escape the pandemic.
That's right. So we absolutely shouldn't talk to our dystopia expert, Pam Bedore. Oh, wait. We talk to her every morning as we read through the canon of Sherlock Holmes stories.
And while we say that, she has her second expertise, which is in detective fiction from the late 1800s. And doggone it, here we are.
The 19th century detective expert is here every morning. We're reading through these stories. She's keeping us on task most of the time. And we are having so much fun with these. I hope that you're enjoying them and listening along and reading along with us to keep your mind off of some of the struggles that we're having in the world.
And if you haven't read these, this is your opportunity to jump in. You can absolutely send us questions and you can make comments about these because they are fascinating. They do change over time. The grouping that we're reading right now was late in Doyle's life, certainly is very different from the earlier writings.
Mm-hmm. And they're so timely. The issues that he's bringing up apply to 2020 just as much as they did to 1920. And it's so interesting to have these conversations. Follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes to be a part of that conversation and go to our dedicated website, sandwichesatirregularhours.com, for all of those 100 plus different conversations that we've had so far with Professor Bedore. And we want to thank her for putting up with us for these 100 episodes and giving us such great, great insight into this literature.
She's going to be a saint before this is over.
That's right. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Yes, sir. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future.
To learn how to make a Bernaise sauce.
There you go. That'll do it. Bastille Day Bernaise sauce.